This week's episode has a trigger warning for potentially upsetting subject matter. Check the show notes at www.bitchesoncomics.com to find out more. This is Bitches on Comics, where we talk about comics as bitches, by bitches, for bitches. My name is Sarah Century.
And I'm Essie Fleenor.
We have a question from Sean. I just listened to your fridging episode. Obviously, fridging is gender-based. But how do you think it would change or might change with the inclusion of more LGBTQ plus characters? For instance, do you think they would only fridge women characters' female love interests, or would they also fridge male love interests? Or would they, to no one's surprise, only fridge LGBTQ plus characters, and then still only mostly women? First off, Sean, thank you so much for listening. We so appreciate it. And thank you for this incredibly nuanced question.
Yeah, this is a fun one.
Yeah, well, you know, depressing AF.
Fun, depressing. The kind of fun I like to have.
Sarah, she's so sad. So I think that what we can start with is talking a little bit about everybody's favorite trope, bury your gaze.
Right.
Which is also called
dead lesbian syndrome.
Bum, bada, bum. So already you can see there's a gendered component.
Right.
But essentially, bury your gaze is a trope that originates in Victorian novels. Well, you know, you could probably debate.
When gay people first showed up in novels.
Yes. I was like, we could probably talk about other cases as well. But yes, generally when we talk about this trope, we mean specifically something that came out of Victorian era novels. You weren't allowed to create LGBTQ plus characters, but then suddenly you could, but the only way you could is if something fucking tragic happened to them.
And they were evil.
Or they were evil.
And suffering from a sickness.
Yes, exactly. And so the idea was to...
They are called eccentrics.
And what happens is they're trying to couple the ideas of queerness and badness in some sense or another. So the idea is you could be queer, but only if something truly tragic or terrible happened to you.
They're anti-normal, right? You're queer, you're anti-normal.
Exactly.
And normalcy is what we want.
Well, yeah, especially Victorian era, right? Like that was name of the game. So I think that it's important to know that sort of historical root. Mm-hmm. And then it really just keeps being the case. Barrier gaze and dead lesbian syndrome just keeps going and going and going and going. And is still happening today. I mean, last year on a major TV show called The Magicians, where they set themselves up as a show for queer people, for women, they killed off a major character who was bi. Mm-hmm. And they did it in just this like disgusting way. There was just complete disregard for queer experience. And it's frustrating, right? Because especially for shows and programs that really trade on their queer identity and their feminist identity, to then bury their gaze is really frustrating. And we can correlate across, like we talked about a little bit, with dead lesbian syndrome. And Sarah, like, tell me a little bit about, you know, not just your thoughts, but like, how did that trope, like, how did you become aware of that trope?
Because the lesbians always die.
Yeah.
So it was basically whenever I was a kid, of course, I think a lot of queer people can relate, some maybe can't, but I was looking for a lot of media and trying to find myself in these things. And of course, we know about, you know, subtext and all of that. So I was a big classic film fan, and classic film, contrary to popular belief, does have queer characters in it, right? But as you say, terrible things happen to them. So you have, you know, Dracula's daughter, who is literally a vampire. You know, she's a bad person and she's feeding on women. She's literally eating them, right? Feeding off of their life essence and all of that kind of stuff. You have this very coded but also implicit understanding of Dracula's daughter. She's wrong, but it's not just because of what we're seeing here. It's because of this other thing that we're not talking about. So that is all over, right? So you have a lot of barrier gaze, kind of dead lesbian stuff. For instance, I was so into theater stuff, you know, and just total nerd whenever I was a kid. And, you know, watching stuff like The Fox, in which the lesbian is literally crushed to death by a tree. And just again and again, it happens. You have the Children's Hour, where suicide is the way that she deals with having a gay crush. And
I mean, Buffy.
Yeah, like, Buffy even, like, yeah.
There's so many different manifestations of this over film, TV, comic books.
Right.
Any media, really.
And that's why even the characters in The Haunting, you have Theo, right? And Theo's kind of mean and all of that. And she's an artist. You know, it's very, she's like an eccentric artist.
Wink, wink, she's an artist.
Yeah, but she doesn't die. And I like her a lot. And that was kind of the thing. You start to be able to empathize with these people who are villains whenever you watch this trope play out a lot of times. There's a movie called Young Man with a Horn, which is totally about Lauren Bacall being essentially a lesbian. She's moving to Paris with an artist and is, you know, over the moon for this artist. They can't say it. And she's obviously villainized for it. She doesn't die, though. So the few instances where they don't die, it actually really stands out and is kind of a huge deal. But we see it again and again.
But, like, it's not like they're happy. They just don't die. That's
Amy might have been happy in Young Man with a Horn because okay. She totally, like, moves out with an artist and Kirk Douglas ends up on a spiral. But anyway, she's definitely still the villain, right? She's considered right. to be shallow. She gets her comeuppance right. because he, like, chews her out and is really disgusted with her and says, oh, you know, you're not normal. He says stuff like that to her, right?
Well, it's always a cautionary tale is maybe what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Versus, like,
don't be like her.
Yeah. And that's, like, don't end up dead.
Yeah.
Don't end up dead, because if you love people who are like you, you're going to end up dead.
Yeah.
And that threat has been real, not just from gay bashing or HIV virus or any number of horrible things, but it's really frightening the way that that trope has played out and how it has impacted the way we think of LGBTQ plus people.
I also want to note that there's a difference in the way that, for instance, you know, a trans person or trans lesbian or any of those different gender identities would play out. For instance, a trans woman is almost always predatory in cinema. So that's a totally different thing than, you know, barrier gays or the dead lesbian syndrome. They certainly have a lot of crossover, and the epic violence that is inflicted on trans people in cinema and, you know, in day-to-day life, of course, is its own different conversation in a way, but it's also the same conversation. I just want to acknowledge that it's a different side of that.
I think that's really important. And I think, again, the way that trans folks, the way that we have been particularly vilified, you're absolutely right, is a different nuance.
Because lesbians are predatory in these stories as well. Like, I don't want to say that they're not, but there's certainly a difference in the way that it's portrayed, because you have that kind of insidious, almost a passive predatory nature for lesbians a lot of times. And then whenever a trans person shows up in cinema, it's like Sleepaway Camp or something like that. You know, it's
yeah.
these really violent situations. And I mean, honestly, the thing that surrounds all of these stories is violence and out
Absolutely.
Of proportion level of violence that is always aimed at these characters. And that is across gender identities. It also applies to a lot of male characters, obviously.
Absolutely.
But it is a little bit different because public perception on different queerness, I guess.
Yeah, I think that we were talking about this earlier, Sarah. It's like if you take a Russian nesting doll, right? And it's like, okay, so here's Barry, your gaze.
Right.
And then you put it in another Russian nesting doll, and that's Fridging.
Right.
And then you can put that in another Russian nesting doll, which is like transphobia.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, so that would be like a trans lesbian's experience.
Sure.
Is those things layering one on the other and deeply rooted in a body-based violence, right? There's a certain way that when this violence takes on a gendered component,
mm-hmm.
whether that's a gender binary component, you know, a cisgender component, misogynist component, any of those layers, it takes a different kind of violent tone.
And it's internalized too, because you have people like Tennessee Williams, who wrote something like Suddenly Last Summer, which is a movie that I love, but it is essentially about a rich, predatory gay man who uses his wealth to procure young people of color overseas where he won't be held accountable for his crimes. And of course, that's never actually spoken, but he's definitely brutally killed in the movie. And, you know, spoiler alert for a movie that was released in the 50s, but that's a movie that's so unbelievably problematic. Of course, as a kid, I watched it and I still can watch it and have this interesting kind of connection with it, because these are the stories that we're left with, right? So you see me a lot of times being like lesbian vampires. I really relate to lesbian vampires. And of course, as a joke, because consent is like a myth in those movies and like that kind of stuff, you know? So it's not great to be relating to these characters, but it's what we're given. So a lot of us end up watching a lot of these movies. I believe a lot of people end up internalizing internalizing it in different ways. So you can accept a lot of victimhood in life, or you can accept a more predatory stance. Some of us just are like, damn, that was heavy, you know, or something.
No, but I really agree with you. I think that it matters how we represent.
Of course it does.
And that's why there's the term representation matters.
Yeah.
I was talking to a therapist who works with gender nonconforming and trans youth and adults.
Mm-hmm.
And Z said that when Z was coming out, Z couldn't imagine life beyond 23. And the reality is, getting very emotional, the reality is that many trans people can't. And so we don't have an ability to remember or to imagine a future. And that's because every trans character dies.
Yeah.
And it's unacceptable that that's the reality we live with. And I think that when we talk about these tropes, it's hard. You and I don't always love these episodes. And that's why we don't. We had a version of the podcast where we talked about a trope every week and we were like, oh my God, my soul can't take it.
Yeah.
So when we do, it's really important that we break this down. And so I'm just so glad that you asked, Sean. I think the future of these things is uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I read Vita Ayala's comics, I feel one way.
Yeah.
And when I read some other people's, I feel a very frightened way.
Yeah.
Version.
Are they just going to keep letting these different people who don't have a connection to our culture be able to be the ones who completely tell our stories?
And have the definitive fucking word on it.
Yeah. And that's been repetitive, especially in comics, where once again, we see characters who are queer characters and everybody still loves like the straight person's run on them the best and all of that kind of stuff. So queer characters exist in comics now, but most of the time they're still written by straight people. And that's definitely something that has to be acknowledged. It's really good whenever they're not. So you have Xena, you know, and stuff like that. You have these really good comics that exist out there. And of course, there's tons of queer people who are out here pushing and making change, but it's an uphill struggle. It's not always easy, you know. It's not always emotionally easy, and it's also not always financially easy. So, you know, every little success we really do count. But as far as if going forward having these more LGBTQ characters is going to change things, I would say that people will be making the same mistakes no matter what happens, because literally Green Book won the Oscar last year, you know?
Like, yeah.
We see a lot of progression and people change and do things, and there's, you know, way more marginalized voices. And of course, we're seeing a lot of people curve and change and have so much more, you know. For me, just as a queer person, I love to read all queer media. I don't just read lesbian stuff. But as somebody who really is an advocate for queer media and always has been, now is a great time because, of course, there's things I can read where Martha Doby doesn't go kill herself after she discovers that she has a crush on somebody who might reciprocate and we never find out anything further. And just that unanswered question that is, why didn't she just ask her out, or like, why didn't she this or that? And I know that not everybody can, but just that whole conversation, and those are not the things that ever get to play out, right? We never actually get to see those lived through. We never get to see the old like married, you know, happy,
the or even tragic ending.
Yeah, any kind of happy ending we don't really have. And if we do, it's always kind of so few and far between. So as far as if it's going to change, yes, because it is changing, because we are changing it physically with our strong wills.
And with our damn podcast.
Our great writing and all of the things that we do every day. And how much at a certain point it just is them shooting themselves in their foot not to be able to let us tell our own stories. But I do think that it will still continue to be a struggle. And I do think that we're still going to see barrier gaze for a very long time to come, because I don't think that people learn that fast. We've been dealing with all of these stereotypes for such a long time.
Exactly. And we don't treat LGBTQ folks like we exist before 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no LGBTQ history taught in schools.
Yeah.
It's actively erased. Nobody knows Da Vinci's queer.
And this is all important stuff to know. For me, I'm a big history buff, and therefore the history of censorship. If you want to understand anything about the history of censorship in the United States of America, you have to know about the Black press and you have to know about the queer press.
That's
because
right.
Otherwise you don't know anything about what's happening. You just know somebody who got mad because they read Ulysses by James Joyce and put him on trial, which is nothing compared to all of this other other history of people really having their voices actively pushed down. And that is continuing to this day. That's not something that just changed all of a sudden.
Absolutely
so not. My whole idea of it is just, yeah, of course, you know, we're doing great. We're doing everything that we possibly can. As far as will it change going forward, even whenever they didn't do Dead Lesbian Syndrome, it was like North Star is gone from the book for 15 years after he comes out of the closet. He doesn't get a boyfriend or a kiss or anything. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, he's married now and he's happy, so don't worry about it. And then yeah. We don't really hear that much about him. So they just keep writing him out of the books that he's a main character in. So the fact that even a main character, a very prominent character like North Star, is continually written out of his own stories and out of our own stories.
Even Valkyrie, right? With the Defenders. Valkyrie with the Defenders. As soon as she kisses Annabelle, it's like, oh, turns out this comic's got to end.
Yeah, and that story is weird too, because they end up inhabiting a body and being kind of abusive to each other, which is very strange. And I want to love that story because I love that moment. You see that kiss between them and you're just like, what? Oh my God, this is going to be the best. But in a way, it still really just actively went to erase ongoing Valkyrie romance stories with a woman. And that sucks because we really had to wait until Hollywood started to hint at her queerness before they started to kind of bring that up again. And that sucks. You know, all of these things really suck.
And there are people doing great things. And I think it's this constant tension of like, how do we lift up the voices of LGBTQ creators? How do we honor the experiences of LGBTQ creators and people? And how do we call to account those who aren't, who are depicting us in ways that are, it's not unfavorable. It's like, that's fucking fucked up. That's transphobia. That's biphobia. That's queerphobia. That's homophobia. Like what you're doing is wrong.
Right.
But it's hard because I wrote an article about fat shaming in the queer community and it broke my heart.
Yeah.
I was bawling my eyes out for hours just reading these studies about how fat people's lives are going to be shorter. Not because we're fat, but because of the discrimination we face. And it's like, that's what it takes to hold people accountable, is we have to expose ourselves to pain.
Yeah.
And really say like, I'm going to still do this because it matters, even if it's going to cost me something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And also like, I get paid nothing. It's not like I'm rolling in dough.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's a long uphill battle and it seems like it'll never end. But, you know, I'm like, death comes someday for all of us.
Death comes for us all. And that's Sarah's thing that she says at night before she goes to bed to reassure herself. I was going to say, and then I get to start a podcast with someone that I really respect, who is queer, who is making important queer comics, who is contributing to the voices in the world.
Yeah.
And it's like, some days I'm like, I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
Sure, yeah.
And some days I'm like, how lucky am I to be here?
And some days I'm like, am I the only person who deserves to live on this planet?
And some days I think you're right, Sarah. I have some bad days.
Sarah's the only one that stays. Everybody else goes.
You gotta go. You kicked out.
It's fine. I don't know. It's like such a bad and long situation. And so questions like this, it's helpful to just take stock of where we're at, I think, because
Absolutely. It
has been so much change and so little change. And I think that that's one of the biggest problems with us when we talk about social justice. Right now, we're all worried about if we're going to stay alive at all, you know?
Oh my God, right.
Having these conversations of, oh yeah, and what's going on with barrier gays these days is kind of like, well, God, you know, it's still here, unfortunately, and it's still thriving. But queer artists are making our own way like we've always had to do.
I just feel like we can't finish this segment without talking about the reality of the 20 black trans women who've been killed this year.
Yeah, it's...
it's October. It's unacceptable. And that's the reality we have to live with. And we have to, as white people with privilege, like we have to continue to be working to make this visible and to hold ourselves accountable for the way transphobia and racism in particular show up in our lives.
Yeah. And how sometimes you just don't live to get the chance to tell your story. And that's
right.
Unbelievably tragic. And of course, disproportionately affects people. It's really upsetting and sad and awful. And the horribleness of it is something that sometimes can leave you speechless, but it's important that we keep talking.
Absolutely. And keep creating. I think that you and I talk about this a lot as people who are both creative and culture critics. I think that if you do one without the other, if you're a person who is creative, I think there are people who are just straight up great critics and more power to you. I get exhausted by the criticism work because it's so much work of saying, oh, this was good and this part was really awful. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I really liked this comic. If only they hadn't made a fat joke in the third panel.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, if only, if only, if only. And then when I create, I get to say, like, fuck all of that. In my world, you're queer, you live. I'm sorry. I don't care. There's the ending of every book I ever write. They live because I'm fucking sick of it. I'm sick of everybody dying.
Yeah, I hope we see more stories like that going forward.
This week's comic of the week is Abbott, written by Saladin Ahmed, illustrated by Sami Cabella, colored by Jason Wordy, and lettered by Jim Campbell. Abbott, created by Saladin Ahmed.
This comic was on every best of list for 2018, pretty much, with great reason.
Oh, it earned that spot for sure.
Yeah, it really was one of the best things I read last year.
I love it so much. It's the story of Elena Abbott. She's a Black journalist in Detroit. She's bisexual, which comes up and is super hot. And it's like 1972, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a reporter, but she kind of gets thrust into this investigative, beyond reporting, role, where she's really the only person taking seriously the hate crimes that are happening to Black people
mm-hmm.
and brown people in Detroit. And it starts actually as Black people are being blamed for the crimes that are happening right. against Black people. So a horse is killed, and then everyone's like, oh, it must be one of those people.
In Detroit.
Yeah, oh, those people. And it's Abbott who really invests in making a difference and in finding what the hell is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it slowly is revealed as she does that she has this history with the paranormal and supernatural.
Right.
And so she has not only, you know, this investigative lens, not only this personal stake, but then this other kind of knowledge that no one else has.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of why she's marginalized, though, I mean, she's like a Black woman. Like, everyone hates her because she's a Black woman.
In the publishing world.
Yeah, she's at a mainstream newspaper. Her editor likes her, but
she looks amazing.
Oh my God. She's such a Betty. She's like always smoking cigarettes and drinking brandy.
Yeah.
You're just like, okay, I would do
those things.
Which
every guy got away with during that time.
Exactly. But. You know, I think that Ahmed and Cavella do such an amazing job playing with the themes of the 70s.
Yeah.
70s comics, 70s comics,
exploitation
colors,
films.
Exploitation films, and then twisting them, you know, twisting them just to make them feminist, to make them queer, to make them
supernatural.
Supernatural. It's really incredible. She also wears like an ascot.
Her outfits are just unbelievable. The art in this is so, so good. It feels like something that this artist, I can't imagine. The style is so good for the series. I can't imagine who else would have drawn this. I know
totally.
That obviously somebody else could have drawn it, and I'd probably feel exactly. This was so great, and it fit the series so well, but this was one where, for me, the art and the merger between the story and the art clicked so, so well. And the busy panels, they have so much wording. And I believe that he's kind of a wordy writer a lot. You definitely
yeah, for
get
sure.
a lot on his pages. That was true in a lot of his books. I like that. I mean, I grew up on Uncanny X-Men written by Chris Claremont, so you can't get through that without reading tons of like purple prose and exposition. But this comic, I think, was really interesting because it's such a dynamic storytelling all of the time. So even whenever she's having these laid back moments, it's in this dynamic memory, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Her love story was really pretty and beautiful and sad. Just
when there's like the layers of love story.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the lover that she lost, and then there's the lover that is like this badass Asian goddess.
Who
of
obviously
crime.
I was obsessed with.
Oh.
That was I just wanted her to be on every page, of course.
Oh.
But
I think she is in later issues. We're talking really here about volume one.
But yeah.
Beyond volume one, I think she comes back more.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, she's so fine. And like, I think a nice antagonist
oh,
to
yeah. Great.
Abbott.
Love it. Love ex-antagonists.
Oh,
they're
so
such good.
Good
antagonists.
Who Who knows how to press your buttons better?
Yeah.
And is super loyal. You know, she shows up for Abbott in the end when
she does.
As do lots of people. Yeah. And that's the part I like too.
Everybody comes together around her, right?
Yeah, they believe her. You know, like even though what she's describing and experiencing is what I like to think of as like on the edge of your mind because she's experiencing some horror and supernatural things that are hard to wrap your head around.
And the straight world doesn't believe her, right? Exactly. All of the people who are in power don't believe her.
No. They're like, oh, this one. And I think it's really incredible in the end that everyone rallies around her.
Yeah, I like that part a lot too.
It's a nice inversion again of those 70s loner cop comics and stories.
Because it really is the community that saves her, you know, in a way. She saves herself, of course, but it's the community and the support and the love around her that becomes clear at the end of the series after you're, oh, this is the loner, you know, and then at the end you go, oh, we all have people who care about us, even though we want to be loners and talk about how we're loners. Oh.
It's nice. It's such a nice inversion of that, like, maverick. Like,
yeah.
I could do it on my own. And she kind of thinks she has to. I don't think she wants to, but she feels she has to after some really horrible things happen to people close to her.
The one that always sticks out as far as just classic movie monster style is the, you know, body horror centaur to me.
Oh, my gosh.
That poor, tragic boy horse. Yeah. Both of them had terrible times.
Yeah. I love that it seems to me, at least, a really critical examination of the other ways racism manifests.
Yeah.
Right? Racism looks like a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, in a supernatural setting, why would we presume that there wouldn't be a racialized aspect? Why would we presume that white people wouldn't do horrible things to the bodies of black and brown people?
Sure, yeah.
Because they can.
Right.
And it's like, of course they would.
Yeah, and that definitely is a main driving point of this story. Not to give away any major aspects of the plot, but it was beautiful. It's a beautiful comic. It's a great horror comic. It's a great just everything comic, I guess. It has great queer representation, just great diversity in general. It has a lot of different kinds of people. And it, like a lot of exploitation films, we're good about that, you know? Having a lot of different kinds of characters. And they all are tied together by, you know, the one main character.
Ooh,
so good.
Abbott.
Yeah.
Ooh, love
Abbott. And also just loved this series. It's
so good.
Brilliant. A lot of people, again, this is one where you're not going to hear a lot of negative reviews about it because it's really difficult to think of something that I didn't like in this comic.
A plus.
A plus plus plus.
We grade comics now.
And we grade them by pluses.
Yep. It's the number of pluses you get.
Three, maximum.
Plus and a half.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess Abbott's better than I thought it was, even. And we're on a plus, plus, plus and a half.
If you have questions for Bitches on Comics, or if you're a comic creator and want to send us copies of your work, please email us at bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. Gmail does not like the word bitch, so make sure you leave the I out, otherwise we won't get your email. Remember, there is no I in bitch.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have a Patreon, www.patreon.com/bitchesoncomics, where we have exclusive content.
I'm Essie Fleenor, and you can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com.
I'm Sarah Sentry, and you can learn more about me at www.sarahsentry.com. Music provided by Earth Control Pill, which you can find at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded and edited by Kate Warner. Learn more about Kate and her band, Churchfire, at churchfiremusic.com. Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.